Hi, it's Helen. Just wanted to give you a heads up that in this episode, my audio might sound not so great because I am not feeling so great. I am really, really sick and was feeling really sick when we recorded this episode. So in a fit of coughing, sinus issue, I might have somehow messed up the audio on my computer. I don't know what exactly happened, but if it sounds a little janky, that is what's going on, and I apologize. But hopefully you'll enjoy hearing me anyway. So let's get to it. Are you a real know-it-all? Do you annoy your family by shouting the answers while watching Jeopardy? Do you drive people crazy when you start a sentence with, well, actually? Well, guess what? You can go fact yourself. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Go Fact Yourself, the show where we quiz the smartest people we know and find out why they love what they love. I'm Helen Hong. And now, recording remotely from our homes in Los Angeles, here's our moderator, J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you so much, Helen. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, J. Keith.
Now, Helen, I don't know if you can hear, but I am sitting mere yards from an actual picket that is happening outside of CBS Television City.
Ooh. You're in the thick of the writer's strike.
I am, and I know that's an important issue to you as well. You've been very vocal about that.
It is. I've been very vocal. So for those of you that are not in the entertainment industry, there is a Writers Guild of America, which is the Screenwriters Guild, are striking right now against, quote unquote, the man. basically, Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and, you know, CBS and all the big studios, they've been making record profits, but not sharing any of the profits with the actual creatives that are making the shows, i.e. the writers, the actors, the, you know, the crew people, none of us down here who are actually in the thick of making the TV shows that you love are seeing any of the profits. And they're even talking about things like, hey, if AI gets good enough to write a show, we're going to employ AI instead of you writers. And we're like,
Sometimes it might be hard for people to relate to, but I think if you just think about what any union is fighting for, it's fair wages, fair play, a fair deal, so that workers don't get exploited by people who are employing them. So if it's something that you're interested in finding out more about, of course, you can do that online. I also wanted to mention that one of our former guests, Adam Conover, has been a great advocate for writers and really good at explaining a lot of what's going on his Twitter feed. So I would definitely recommend checking that out.
Yeah, a lot of you may know him as Adam Ruins Everything, and mm-hmm. He is a really smart guy. He's also one of the people who are actually at the table of negotiations. And I am not in the WGA, but I have many friends in the WGA. I'm eligible to be in the WGA. I'm in SAG, actually, which is a sister union. Our negotiations start in July, and I'm like, I'm ready to strike. So that's what's going on over here.
That is what's going on over here. Well, what's going on today on Go Fact Yourself is, of course, two guests will compete to answer questions about facts they know, facts they may not know, and frankly, facts they should know. Plus, we'll meet actual experts on two very different topics. And finally, we'll declare one of our guests the winner of today's show. Let's get started and meet today's guest. Helen, who is up first?
She is a comedian, storyteller, and TikTok star with over 30 million likes. It's Ellen Aquario.
Hello, Ellen.
Hello. So happy to be here.
So happy to have you. Now, Ellen, I have to confess, I am not very familiar with TikTok. I went on yesterday so I could try to get to know you better, and I instantly was confused and overwhelmed. there were just so many badges and texts I didn't understand. Can you tell us what is it that you like about TikTok, and why do you think your videos have gotten such huge response?
Well, you know, I'm 41 years old, and I don't really tell people I'm on TikTok in my demographic.
Really?
Well, I think it's less embarrassing now. It used to be really embarrassing because it was considered such a kids app. I joined during COVID because I was just bored and couldn't get stage time as a comedian. It evolved into, you know what, I want to speak up for. When I was a kid, I had nobody speaking up for my point of view. And I have so many young BIPOC youth telling me, I wish I could say the things that you could say. Like, their perspectives are in line with mine. And even actually people my age, I wish I could say what you are saying, but I can't because I have a job. And I don't, so, you know. I mean, I'm a comic.
That's how I first sort of got to know about you is, you know, a few of your videos went viral and it just came kind of popped up on my feed. And I was like, damn, this girl is like, she's fearless and she's got so much personality and she's sassy and she's just speaking the truth and she's funny about it. So that's why I sort of became aware of you. I think you're great.
But Helen, did you know that we met?
Did we?
I met you at Women in Comedy Festival in Boston, sponsored by HBO. I thought that you might have remembered because I was such a creeper and I kind of like danced over to you like, hey.
No, that was like 5 or 6 years ago, right? It was quite a while ago.
That's right. And you look fantastic. And I was like, oh my God, there's Helen. So yeah, I tried to dance with you and you were so nice.
Helen did tell me you should book that creepy lady who I met at the comedy festival 5 years ago. That is partly why you're here.
I have no recollection of that. Also, I did a lot of drugs in college, so I don't. Yeah. I have no recollection of a lot of things, but I think you're a great TikTok star. I am so impressed by what you're doing, and I love that you are an Asian woman, and particularly a Korean American woman who's similar in age to me and kind of like knows exactly the way I grew up. That you're just fearless, and I love that. You're just like, you know what? I don't care what my parents think, or I don't care what society thinks. Like, I'm just gonna say what I need to say, and you make it funny too. That's what's great.
You're making my heart all the things I wanted to hear from my parents that I never did. You know, when your parents reject you enough, you don't care. If they cut you off, You're like, you know, finally.
Well, speaking of parents, you're taking a little bit of a left turn with a new project that you're doing. You're writing a children's book. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's kind of all is aligned with everything that's happened, but I have two boys. Mm-hmm. 7, 11, the 1 year I can remember their ages, and it's dedicated to them. They both have their stuffed animals that they love. One's Panda, one's Penguin, and it's The Adventures of Panda and Penguin. I always wonder, like, what could I have been had I had white parents that told me, you can be anything you want to be? And so with my kids, I don't even want them to be anything other than just, like, decent human beings in life. Like, don't turn out to be horrible people, please. So that's what the book is about. Be you. They meet different creatures. You can do the things you want to do, and that can still be you. So that's what the book is about. And it's the idea of, like, I wish I was told those things.
That's a real gift that you're giving to your children and to the children who read it. And by the way, I just want to point out, not all white parents are as encouraging as you can imagine. Thank you so much for being here, Ellen Aquario.
Thank you.
Helen, against whom will Ellen be competing?
He is an award-winning journalist and author who hosts the popular daily podcast, The Gist. It's Mike Pesca.
Hey, Mike Pesca.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So wonderful to have you here. The Gist, of course, is the longest-running daily news podcast in history. Why do a podcast every day? We find it hard enough to do one twice a month.
I listen at double speed, so even though my podcast comes out 5 times a week, for me, it's only like 2.5 times a week on the listening front. You can even put your podcast on pause. By the way, humorous podcast or humorous trivia podcast, you might say, oh, does the humor get hurt when you listen at double speed? It does not. It just makes you guys seem quicker.
Oh, well, how about that? Helen likes that a lot.
Do I sound like a squirrel, though, at double speed?
No. They have excellent technology to de-squirrelize everyone.
Okay.
You sound like, at best, an ibis.
Well, I'm going to give a message to you, Mike, for when you listen to this. Hi, Mike. And let me know if that sounds any different.
I'm going to slow that down to half speed so you sound drunk.
That won't be difficult.
That's how I amuse myself.
What's so wonderful about The Gist is that you bring in so many smart people to discuss just so many different kinds of topics and from different perspectives. I'm curious, are there times where your mind has actually been changed on a topic because of something you discussed with a guest?
Always and often, and it's pretty much the high point of the program for me. Even podcasts that are debate or discussion shows, it's always 3 or 4 people agreeing with each other. I'll do a whole show where I talk about like that big mask study. Do they work? Don't they work? Mm-hmm. I've had 6 different guests. I have many different thoughts on it, and I present it to the audience, you know, all those thoughts. So I think that's what broadcasters should be doing.
Yeah, I remember those days of television, especially where that was the case, where you could actually consider someone's point of view and not just be yelled at. Well, you have something in common with Helen Hong here in that you've guest hosted Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. What was that experience like for you?
I loved it. As you know, Helen, when you're working on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the week going up to the show is just being in a comedy writer's room. And that is so much fun. And I love that, the experience of putting the show together. And then when you pair it with the improvisational nature of the show itself, it's a great time.
You know what I loved about you being on NPR generally is that you don't sound like a quote unquote traditional NPR broadcaster. You have a New York accent. You sort of have a little bit of a gruff, like, everyday guy demeanor. And that's why whenever I heard you in any capacity on NPR, I really enjoyed hearing you.
There's another little secret about NPR, which is not just how the people talk, but what they say, which is that a lot of two ways, which are when the host of a program interviews a reporter, those are, I'm going to give a big thing away, those are scripted. Some of the great reporters on NPR definitely don't do scripted two ways, and I think you really hear it, and it comes through the radio, and it seems so much more authentic. So I would insist on that, and not just voice, not just, you know, vocal quality and accent, but actual human non-scripted speech is really important and really hooks the listener, and I wish NPR would embrace more of that, maybe hire some more people who could do that well.
Well, listen to this unscripted response I have. Oh, last thing I want to ask you about.
The man is a master of the form.
All right, I'll admit, I had that written down. You recently helped raise money for a Ukrainian family who were refugees. And not only did you meet that goal, you also helped them in a very personal way. Tell us about what you did.
This is all my wife. She found out about this family. There were many Ukrainian refugees and they needed a home for a little while. And we had space in our home for a little while. And a little while became a long while. And I talked about it on the show. But what the State Department does, they have goals and programs to welcome in refugees, such as people who are fleeing the war. It's hard, you know, it's not just about the money, it's about the culture shock. And it's about, I find that when things are very straightforward and the answer is all you have to do is work harder, that's easy. Yeah. But when the answer is something like, you have to know when to pull back, you have to know when to let them take the lead, you have to know when working smarter is working harder, but when working harder is working harder. And these are some of the things that we had to figure out to help the Denyushkins navigate living in America. But we raised a lot of money for them. They're here for a while. Sergey is an electrician. He's gotten a job. The kids are in school. Things seem to be looking up for them.
Amazing.
Wow. God bless you. Wow. Incredible.
Yes. Well, I'm in complete admiration and awe that you and your wife are able to do that, and just amazing. And thank you so much for being here, everybody. It's Mike Pesca. All right, Mike and Ellen, we ask each of you to provide us with a few topics outside your field of work in which you feel you have some expertise. Ellen, you said you know a lot about tennis, the movie 10 Things I Hate About You, and Steven Yeun. Whereas Mike, you said you know a lot about college nicknames and mascots, the movie Caddyshack, and the International Criminal Court in The Hague, the Caddyshack of criminal courts. Mm-hmm. Later on, we're going to ask each of you some in-depth trivia questions about one of those topics. But first, we're going to get your thoughts on something you might know nothing about. It's time to split some hairs with our What's the Difference round. We'll have one question for each of you, each worth up to 2 points. If either of you gives an incorrect or incomplete answer, the other person has a chance to steal. Your topic today, All Alone. First up in All Alone is Ellen. Ellen, your question comes from a listener. Who is it, Helen?
I will let them tell you themselves because we have a listener recording. Listeners, if you'd like to submit a suggestion for our What's the Difference round, go to gofactorpod.com and click on Get Involved. Okay, play it.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Ryan Kopasinski from Mount Gilead, Ohio. My question for What's the Difference is, while both might have you speaking all alone, what's the difference on stage between a monologue and a soliloquy? Thanks. Love the show. Have a good one.
Oh, thank you so much, Ryan. All right, Ellen, you heard Ryan. What is the difference between a monologue and a soliloquy?
One is talking to the people. The other is talking to the air.
Okay, and which one is which?
The monologue is talking to the people, and soliloquy is talking to the air.
Talking to the air, which you would never put words through the air to people. It would stop at the air.
Yeah, it would just sit in the air.
It would just sit in the air.
Right.
We've got Ellen's answer. We don't know yet if she's entirely correct. Mike, if you don't think she got it exactly right, you can steal. Anything you want to change or add?
I'm just going to break down the etymologies, and they're almost the same, right? Mono and solo, those are both the one, but the soliloquy, loquacious, mm-hmm. is the talking, and the monologue, I think that could be written. But I also am thinking of Hamlet's soliloquy, which is a solo scene alone on stage, and perhaps a monologue can be delivered within the context of other actors. So let's go with that. Is that a coherent enough answer?
Wow. I like, that was so smart.
It's funny. Helen usually writes down what people say.
I blacked out for a second. I was just like, wait, what? I'm still at the etymology part that you said like 10 minutes ago.
All right. Well, this segment needs to get off the stage. Let's go to Helen Hong at the judges table for the facts.
Here are the facts. Both monologues and soliloquies involve an actor speaking at length on stage. The difference is who is listening. Because a monologue is when a character speaks so that anyone in the reality of the play can hear them. Think of Mark Antony's Friends, Romans, Countrymen speech in Julius Caesar, a famous monologue. A soliloquy is when a character speaks their interior thoughts only to themselves. We, the audience, can hear them, of course, but no one else in the reality of the play can. Think of Hamlet's To Be or Not to Be, a famous soliloquy.
That's right. The word monologue, as Mike probably knows, comes from the Greek word monologus, which means speaking alone. The word soliloquy comes from the Latin word soliloquium, meaning a talking to oneself. And both of those come from the online etymology dictionary, meaning I Googled it. Helen, how did our guest do?
You know, I'm going to give Ellen both points on this. I think,
right?
Yeah, I think you got, yeah, because you essentially said monologue is to the people and soliloquy is to the air. And that's essentially correct.
Essentially correct is good enough. 2 points for Ellen. Congratulations.
Yeah! What?
All right. Up next in All Alone is Mike. Mike, while both indicate that you might be all alone, what's the difference between a person feeling lonely and feeling lonesome? Lonely and lonesome.
I would say lonely is an emotional feeling where you want for company and mm-hmm. you seek companionship, but you have none. Mm-hmm. The feeling of lonesome perhaps is the feeling of isolated and unconnected to other people, not necessarily wanting other people, maybe saying to yourself, I am the only such person in the world.
All right, fair enough. We've got Mike's answer. Don't know yet if he's entirely correct. Ellen, anything you'd like to add or change?
A person feeling lonely mm-hmm. is sad.
Okay.
A person feeling lonesome.
Yeah.
Is not sad-ish. Yeah. I'm going to go with that.
Not as sad. All right. Well, this segment needs to be left alone. Let's go to Helen Hong at the judges table for the facts.
Here are the facts. A lonely person simply desires companionship, wherever it may come from. A lonesome person desires companionship with someone specific. Whether it's a lover, a pet, or a family, someone lonesome is lonesome for someone.
Oh.
Yes, that's right. Now, in addition to people, both words can describe things, where lonely means singular and lonesome means deserted, like a lonely tree on a lonesome prairie, or, of course, a lonely tumbleweed on a lonesome prairie, or a lonely podcast host in a lonesome converted closet. Helen, how did our guest do?
Mike, I think you got lonely correct, because you did say it's a want for company, which mm-hmm. is correct. Not sure you got lonesome because you said it was unconnected to other people, which isn't quite
right,
correct.
Yeah.
I'd say 1 point for Mike.
1 point for Mike. Very good. What is our score at the end of that round?
At the end of that round, Ellen Aquario has 2 points and Mike Pesca has 1 point.
But those scores are bound to change as we move on to questions about topics our guests have chosen for themselves. It's all up ahead when we come back on Go Fact Yourself. Hey, everybody, it's time to talk about our brand new sponsor, Soylent, the original food tech company that makes delicious and nutritious nutrition products in convenient formats. And I have a special guest here. Who are you?
Hi, I'm Sarah, your fiance.
Oh, yeah, I know you. Well, Sarah, I know that you're super into nutrition. You're a certified nutritional planner or something?
Close. What is it? A certified nutrition coach.
Yeah, and a certified personal trainer.
That's right.
Yeah, somehow those are correct. Well, so you know a lot about nutrition, and Soylent sent us a bunch of products, and I had you be our special tester, and I know that you tried a bunch of their flavors of their Soylent Complete Meals. Tell us what you thought about them.
Well, I think my favorites were the strawberry and the chocolate mint. Ooh, but there was the dark chocolate too, which I'm also a huge fan of. But some of the things I really loved about it was that it was 20 full grams of plant-based protein. Mm-hmm. It had all of these healthy fats. And at 400 calories, I knew it was going to be satiating enough mm-hmm. to be a substitute for a meal when I needed it, which actually happened quite a bit.
Now, Soylent isn't saying that you should replace all of your meals. I mean, nutritionally, it can. But sometimes you don't have time to grab a full meal or to cook, or you're on the go and you just need something extra filling. And that's where Soylent fits the bill. I know one of the things you liked about it also, you were telling me, was that they're resealable. So if you don't want to have it for a full meal, but you just need a filling snack, you seal it up, you put it back in the fridge, and it's good to go for another few days.
And that's exactly what I did. When I needed to train in the morning and I needed something very quick, I could grab one and know that I wasn't going to drink it all because I just wasn't hungry enough. And I would drink half and know it would last at least 3 more days.
Yeah. Now, you were telling me, I would never imply that anything that you consumed made you bloated or bloaty.
How dare you?
Never would I. But you said, especially with Soylent, that that was a big perk for you as well.
Yeah, because it's non-dairy. So I didn't feel that bloated kind of feeling that a lot of whey protein can give.
So it's perfect for breakfast, lunch, or anytime you just need a nutritious meal that is delicious. Boy, I wish Helen Hong were here to tell us how to get some Soylent.
Me too.
I am here.
Oh, hi, Helen.
Hi. Hi, Jake Keith. Hi, Sarah. Go to Soylent.com/GoFact and use code GoFact to get 20% off your first order. That's Soylent.com/GoFact and use code GoFact for 20% off your first order.
And that's why we say,
Thank you, Soylent.
Trans representation in media is at an all-time high, with trans entertainers gracing the screens large and small.
But trans voices, especially Black trans voices, are rarely centered in our own stories.
That's why we bring you a new limited series called We See Each Other, the podcast, co-hosted by me, journalist and better half of the Max Fun podcast, Fanti, Travel Anderson,
and me, award-winning journalist and media personality, Char Jocelle.
All of it is based on my book, We See Each Other, a Black trans journey through TV and film.
Now listen, folks, we're having a very different kind of conversation. It's giving kitchen table talk.
Mm-hmm. We get into the discourse, honey. Tune into We See Each Other, the podcast at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get Slayworthy audio.
Welcome back to Go Fact Yourself with our guests, Ellen Aquario and Mike Pesca. Once again, here's J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. All right, Ellen, of your many interests, you told us that you know and love tennis, the movie 10 Things I Hate About You, and Steven Yeun. Let's find out a little bit more about each of those. First, tell us what you know and love about tennis.
I grew up learning tennis from my dad when I was about 8. And I grew up watching Serena Williams. I thought me and her were like twins, but it's something I grew up doing and currently do. I have an ACL tear on my right leg and an Achilles rupture on my left leg, and I still play.
What?
Wow.
You love it through the injuries. Wow.
Still playing. Still going.
All right. You also said that you know and love the movie 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yes. It's my nostalgia film, my teen love affair, and it was shot in Seattle, and I'm from Seattle, and oh my God, like so many breakout stars from that movie. Heath Ledger, Julia Stiles. Whenever you think nostalgia back to like high school years, that's my film.
All right. And then finally, you said you know a lot about Steven Yeun.
Oh, his acting is superb. Like from his first role in Walking Dead. I mean, I feel like you literally watch him grow as an actor on that show. And then he became this like movie actor. And he loves Conan and Conan loves him, who's my other like super favorite comedian, and I just feel like we're all friends and they don't know I exist,
Conan
but
approved.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
So to summarize, you thought Serena Williams was your sister and Steven Yeun and Conan are your friends.
Yes.
All right. Also to summarize, you said you know and love tennis, the movie 10 Things I Hate About You, and Steven Yeun. Today we're going to quiz you about the movie 10 Things I Hate About You.
Okay. Okay, IBS activated. Okay, cool. Let's go.
That's what it took, huh?
Yeah.
How often do you think you've seen the movie over the years?
First one it came out, and I just kept watching, like, for my favorite bits, and I still watch bits on my TikTok.
What are some of your favorite bits from the movie?
I know you can be overwhelmed, and I know you can be underwhelmed, but can you just be wowed?
Great scene. Just ahead, we're going to list the help of a bona fide expert in your topic with our expert level question worth up to 3 points. But before that, to let you show your love, Ellen, here are 5 trivia questions about your topic, each worth 1 point. If you want it, you're allowed a hint for any 2 of these 5 questions. Now, Mike, listen closely, because if Ellen answers incorrectly, you can steal. Mike, by the way, how much do you know about the movie 10 Things I Hate About You?
You know, there was a genre of movie in that time that had numbers in the title, like 13 Going on 30 and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. I missed all of them, just so you know.
Okay.
I know it was based on, I think, a Christopher Marlowe play, if I'm not getting that wrong.
All right. We'll see if Ellen lets you answer any. Here's question number 1 about 10 Things I Hate About You. The story of 10 Things I Hate About You may sound familiar to those who've never even seen it, because its story, the younger sister can't pursue a relationship unless her older sister, who is seen as very unlikable, does so as well, comes from what Shakespeare play?
Taming of the Shrew!
Ellen?
That is correct.
Very emphatic. Yeah. Not quite the Marlowe story that some have been led to believe, but The Taming of the Shrew.
I'm one of those who believe.
Yes, I know. The numbers. The numbers. It's a conspiracy theory. Fun fact, there are several references to the play sprinkled throughout the movie, including the name of the high school, Padua High. On IMDb, William Shakespeare is credited as one of the screenwriters. No word on if he gets residuals.
Oh.
All right, here's question number 2. The title of the movie comes from a poem that Kat, played by Julia Stiles, reads to her class and especially to Patrick, played by Heath Ledger. It ends with these lines: I hate it that you're not around and the fact that you didn't call, but mostly I hate the way I don't hate you, not even close, not even a little bit, not even what?
At all.
Ellen?
That is correct
for the points. Ellen is 2 for 2. Fun fact, that poem is based on Shakespeare's Sonnet 141. That scene in the film was shot just once, and Julia Stiles' tears were real and not planned.
Yes! I'm on a roll!
You are. Here's question number 3. We get to know the social scene at Padua High School as early in the movie, Cameron, played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, is given the breakdown by Michael. But which of the following is not one of the groups of students that Michael shows him? Is it the Cowboys, the Burnouts, the Future MBAs, the Coffee Kids, or the Don't Even Think About It group?
The Cowboys.
Ellen?
That is not correct.
No!
No, I'm terribly sorry. No, there are Cowboys for some reason at this Seattle area high school. Mike Pesca, chance to steal.
I think the Burnouts is a Ferris Bueller reference. I'll go with that.
Ellen?
That is correct.
Very nice job for the steal from a movie you have not seen.
Nah.
Fun fact, the others are The Basic Beautiful People and The White Rastas. All right, Ellen, let's see if you can bounce back with question number 4. You do still have your 2 hints available. Not only does the movie's soundtrack rock, it spent several weeks on the Billboard charts, but there are some live band performances in the movie as well. During the pivotal prom scene, members of what 2 real-life bands perform on stage?
Letters to Cleo.
And?
Give me a hint.
You would like that hint. Helen, how about that first hint?
One of them sounds like you're sending written correspondence to a famous TV psychic. The other sounds like you're trying to rescue a giant wheel at a carnival.
What would a giant wheel at a carnival
giant
be called?
I mean, that's Ferris.
Okay. And if you're trying to rescue it?
Say Ferris.
And?
Letters to Cleo. I did it.
That is correct.
You did do it. Congratulations. Very nice.
Wow. That was great!
Fun fact, Save Ferris, another reference to Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Also, Monique Powell of Save Ferris was a guest on episode 5 of Go Fact Yourself and an expert for us on episode 56.
Wow.
It all comes back together. All right, here's question number 5, Ellen. You still have your other hint available. Played by Andrew Keegan, high schooler Joey Donner also works as a model. Joey loves to brag and demonstrate his skills, but he isn't too proud to ask for advice, like when he asks Bianca which of his nearly identical modeling pictures she prefers. As seen on the front of these photos, what is the name of Joey's modeling agency?
Wow.
No, I thought you were going to ask me which word he used to describe his photo. I can't use the hints later, right?
Yeah, no, this is your last chance.
Oh, well, then let's use it.
Let's use it, Helen. How about that second hint?
It's a good luck symbol of Ireland and represents the Holy Trinity.
Clover.
Helen, is it clover?
It is not clover.
No, I'm terribly sorry. Mike, for the chance to steal.
If I get this right, there'll be two things she hates about me. But... I'll go with a triskelion.
Helen, is it a triskelion?
Wow, I've never even heard that word in my life. And no, it is not.
No, it is not. We're looking for Shamrock. It is the Shamrock Modeling Agency.
Oh!
Okay. Maybe I overthought that one.
You might have been a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, thank God you did, Brainiac.
Helen, I'm going to let you give the fun fact because it starts with my saying, Bianca says that one of the photos is more pensive, to which Joey replies, damn, I was going for...
thoughtful.
That's right. Very, very good. All right, Ellen, you did pretty well in that round. But now here's your expert level question that requires multiple answers. It is time for your cluster fact. We'll be bringing on an expert to discuss your response. As a senior in high school, not only does Kat have to deal with her teachers, her social life, and her family, but she also has to deal with going to college. Screenwriters Karen McCullough and Kirsten Kiwi Smith inform the character of Kat by having her long to attend a school that reflects Kat's independent thinking and feminist views, but is far from her Seattle home. So, for up to 3 points, what local university does Kat's father initially want her to attend? What college does Kat want to go to, which her father ultimately supports, and what cast member who played Kat's sister Bianca actually attended this school, graduating 5 years after the movie came out?
Okay.
So let's break it down. You know the Seattle area. Yeah, so what local university?
University of Washington.
University of Washington, all right. And then what college does Kat want to go to?
I want to say, I should know this. I don't know why I want to say Baylor. I don't think
Baylor.
That's it at all.
Okay. And then finally, who played Kat's sister Bianca, who actually attended this school in real life?
I want to say it starts with M.
Okay.
Martha.
Okay.
That's so wrong.
Helen is taking note of your answers. We have an extra on hand who can tell us for sure. In fact, we have multiple experts. Helen, who do we have tonight?
Joining us tonight are three people who helped make 10 Things I Hate About You.
No.
The screenwriters, Karen McCullough and Kirsten Kiwi Smith.
Whoa.
And the actor who played Bianca, Larissa Olenek.
Whoa.
Hello, everybody.
I'm dying.
That's Larissa who is dying. Larissa, tell us why you're dying.
First of all, heretofore known as Martha. Yes. I am definitely a white lady with a liberal arts education.
Well, welcome to all of you, and thank you for being such good sports. Ellen seems a little embarrassed. Do we maybe want to talk her down?
They already prefaced this by saying, like, she might not know. And I'm like, I will not be offended in the slightest.
I am offended.
I am not the most interesting person in that movie.
So are.
Although I'm glad you know that. I'm glad you quoted the line because I'm the whelmed and underwhelmed line. I'm glad you. I get that one all the time.
Well, Larissa, of course, people will know you also as the star of The Secret World of Alex Mack. Your recurring roles on shows like Third Rock from the Sun, Mad Men, and Hawaii Five-0. You're now starring in a new show on Nickelodeon called Erin and Erin, which I'll talk to you about in a moment. Karen and Kiwi, you are the most successful female screenwriting duo ever. In addition to your work on 10 Things I Hate About You, people will know your movies Ella Enchanted, The House Bunny, The Ugly Truth, She's the Man, and a little something called Legally Blonde.
What?
We are your nostalgia queens over here.
Well, those movies have grossed a total of over $500 million. Congratulations on those wonderful successes
down.
That you've had. Kiwi, I was talking with you yesterday, and you said that some people are surprised when you find out that the same people who wrote 10 Things I Hate About You wrote some of those other movies. Which one in particular?
You know, obviously, they have a lot of love for these movies, which all came out kind of close together. And I think they're surprised mm-hmm. that the same two women wrote Legally Blonde, 10 Things, and She's the Man. And it means a lot to us.
We were very busy those couple years, for sure.
We were.
Yeah. Karen, do you often find people who refuse to see your movies because they have numbers in the title?
Never. Not once until today.
Okay, that's a new one.
But a new bias we're not aware of.
Karen, is it true that 10 Things was the first script that you two sold?
Yes. Absolutely.
Wow.
Very nice.
One of my favorites.
And Larissa, let's talk about how you got involved. I understand you actually wanted to play a different role originally.
Yeah, well, I was auditioning for both Kat and Bianca simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until we got to sort, I think, the final screen test. And Karen and Kiwi do take credit for my going to Sarah Lawrence. I'm not going
to. Sarah Lawrence! God!
Well, now that we've revealed this part of our answer, I should point out also what's interesting about this movie is that I went to Sarah Lawrence as well.
Whoa!
So my ears definitely perked up when I heard that reference throughout the film. And also, sometimes you'll hear Sarah Lawrence as a punchline or a shorthand to make an insult. But in this one, it really was a genuine ambition for this character. Where did the idea of putting Sarah Lawrence in the screenplay come from, Kiwi and Karen?
Oh, yeah. It was like a 90s... feminist iconic school, and I think they'd only barely started admitting men shortly before that. I don't know if that's true, but also I'd like to say that can we take credit for you going to Sarah Lawrence as well, JP?
Yes, absolutely. Even though the movie came out after I had graduated, it definitely influenced me somehow. Karen, I was watching a video earlier that was about 10 years ago of you and Kiwi's writing process, and you were writing on yellow pads and you're working on index cards on the floor of your home. What's your method of writing now?
Well, I have an index card right here that I want to. So nothing much has changed.
We have a record of ideas that we cross out. We can look at them, as opposed to if you're typing up something and then you go back and delete it, it's hard to recreate it. But we have reams and reams of crossed out things that if we ever need to refer back to for any reason, we can.
We keep it all too, oddly enough. We have all these plastic tubs in our garage of like old drafts of stuff. And it's kind of fun years later to like, if there's a charity auction, to be like, oh, you want a page from Legally Blonde? Here we go.
Oh, what a great gift.
Hoarding pays off.
That is amazing.
But my garage is very full, so...
Well, again, that's a good sign. Obviously, when you write a first draft of a screenplay, even when you've written the final draft, it varies from what ends up on the screen. Were there things that ended up on the screen that surprised and delighted you, or maybe frustrated you from what you originally had envisioned?
I mean, it's funny you mentioned the poem. And by the way, Ellen, amazing job remembering the last line of the poem. Bravo. Yeah, I think Julia's choice to cry in that scene was a surprise, a delightful surprise to us that she brought all this emotion to the moment.
Well, Larissa, let's talk about what you're up to now. Of course, as I mentioned, a lot of people knew you from Nickelodeon on The Secret World of Alex Mack. What's it like to be back on Nickelodeon in a new show called Erin and Aaron?
I have a 14-year-old named Erin, and then there is a 14-year-old named Aaron. And in the very, very first episode, we are blending our families. And so they are step siblings. I also have a 9-year-old on the show. The kids are awesome. I'm pretty much obsessed with them. Yeah, it's emotional in ways that I didn't quite anticipate.
Oh, interesting.
The show just started airing less than a week ago. So we've kind of been in this beautiful little work bubble. I'm in my dressing room right now. But we will sort of see what happens as the show starts being out in the world a little bit more. And there's a lot of original music on the show. Both the kids play. They're ginormously talented. So
yeah, I was going to ask, do you get to sing? I know you have a musical theater background, yeah?
I do have a musical theater background. That was my first job as a Les Mis kid. I've had a couple different music cues that have gotten cut. I'm trying not to take it personally.
Okay.
But I think this last episode, I had a little something, but it's more just like kind of off the cuff, whatever. I don't have any actual songs. The kids have like actual songs that they are learning and performing. I think there's like six or something throughout the season.
Last thing I want to ask you about, I think it's so wonderful that you all have continued to enjoy being associated with 10 Things I Hate About You. And that's going to happen again May 27th in Los Angeles as a special screening as part of the Cinespia series. It's going to be in the Los Angeles State Historic Park. I understand that at least two of you are going to be there for that.
Yeah, baby. We'll see you there.
Woohoo!
What do you like about going back to screenings and doing Q&As for 10 Things I Hate About You?
It's fun to see what people pick out as memorable lines. Like Nigel with the brie is like,
oh my God.
Oh my God. Kids now think that's like the funniest thing. And that was like such a throwaway line in the script that it's like become this life of its own now.
All right, well, let's get to the reason we brought all three of you here as far as our game is concerned. You heard the questions that we asked of Ellen. First, we wanted to know in the movie, what local university does Kat's father initially want her to attend? Helen, what did Ellen say?
Ellen said the University of Washington.
And Karen and Kiwi?
That was correct.
Correct.
That is correct. Also known as UW. Very good for the point. Next, we do have to ask and confirm, what college does Kat want to go to, which her father ultimately supports? Helen, what was the answer that Ellen gave?
Ellen said Baylor.
And what was it now? We know it was...
Sarah Lawrence.
Sarah Lawrence, our alma mater. Go Griffins, I think it is now.
Go Griffins!
I think it was Black Squirrels when I was there. Who knows?
I still have a t-shirt that says where even the squirrels wear black.
Oh, that's great. Anyway. I love the one that said, Sarah Lawrence football, still undefeated.
Because there's no football team.
Yes, there is no football team. All right, and finally wanted to know what cast member who played Kat's sister Bianca actually attended that school, graduating 5 years after the movie came out. Helen, what did Ellen say?
Ellen said Martha.
And, okay, I was thinking L and M. Oh,
yeah.
My God.
And
it ended with
the A. Yeah, and Larissa, Martha.
Yeah, from here on out.
From here on out, but unfortunately in the movie it was not yet true, so no point there. Who was that actually, Larissa?
Larissa Olenek. That's me.
All right, Ellen, if you can remove your hands from your eyes, is there anything else that you would like to ask or say to our experts while we have them here?
I really do love this movie, and it was super iconic for me at that time. What prompted you to, because you said this is your first screenplay that you sold. What was it that motivated you to write for teens?
Clueless had just come out, and we both really liked it. And My So-Called Life was on TV at the time, and we were obsessed with that. So we were like, we delved into that world again. And at the time, we weren't that far away from it. Now it would be a different scenario for sure.
Excellent. Well, Karen, Kiwi, and Larissa, it was so wonderful to have you. Larissa, if people want to find out more about you and what you're up to, where can they do that?
No, I'm on Instagram, Larissa Olenek. I will hopefully be posting more about cats in the very near future.
Oh, that will get me to follow.
Aaron and Aaron, Thursdays, Nickelodeon. It replays on nick.com. It will eventually be on Paramount Plus and Netflix.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being here, Larissa. And Kiwi and Karen, where can people find out what you're up to? Karen?
Instagram as well, but all you're going to get is pictures of this one.
Karen is holding up her adorable doggy.
But yeah, that's where you can find me.
And Kiwi?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Kiwi Loves You.
Excellent. Well, we love that you all joined us. Thanks for being here. Karen McCullough, Kiwi Smith, and Larissa Olenek. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, guys.
So fun.
So fun.
I will follow you all.
Great. I have to say, I have to watch this movie.
You really do.
Yeah, you really do. You really do.
Sounds amazing.
All right, Helen, what is our score at the end of that round?
At the end of that round, Ellen Aquario has 6 points and Mike Pesca has 2 points with a round of questions for Mike coming up.
That's right. We're going to talk with Mike about a topic he knows about. Plus later, Ellen and Mike will go head to head in our Fast Facts round, all to find a winner on Go Fact Yourself.
The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom.
Diablo 4.
Final Fantasy 16.
Street Fighter 6.
Baldur's Gate 3.
Starfield.
Spider-Man 2.
Master Detective Archives Rain Code for Nintendo Switch? No, is that just me?
It's a huge time for video games.
You need somebody to tell you what's good, what's not so good, and what's amazing.
I'm Jason Schreier.
I'm Maddie Myers.
And I'm Kirk Hamilton. We're the hosts of Triple Click, a video game podcast for anyone who likes games.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Welcome back to Go Fact Yourself with our guests, Ellen Aquario and Mike Pesca. Once again, here's Jake Heath Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. All right, Mike, of your many interests, you told us you know and love college nicknames and mascots, the movie Caddyshack, and the International Criminal Court in The Hague. We're going to have fun today. Let's find out a little bit more about each of those. First, tell us what college nicknames and mascots means to you.
Well, for about 10 years, I was a sports reporter for NPR, and the mascots were something that I thought just appealed to all demographics. But now, thinking about it psychologically, in high school, I went to Oceanside High School, and we were the Oceanside Sailors. And I was the sailor. I wore a giant paper mache Popeye head, and people would pound on it, not thinking there was a human inside. And it was constructed with chicken wire. It would eat into my neck and cause me to bleed. So maybe there's stuff there. Maybe there's stuff I really need to excavate and explore.
Well, that's really what this show ultimately is about.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for the opportunity.
All right. Next, tell us what the movie Caddyshack means to you.
Well, Caddyshack is a fine movie, a great movie, a funny movie. But in college, my friend Paul Bluter, I don't know if you know Paul, he lives in Birmingham now. He's big in the temple. Paul watched that movie every day. every day, every hour of the day, and he used to just call out the actual cuts, the fades. He knew everything about that movie. Now in podcasting, this is a format. There are podcasts called like the Star Wars Minute, and they literally just go over a minute of the movie in every episode. They should do the Caddyshack Minute. So this was more a movie or an obsession that was thrust upon me. But when you asked, you know, what do I know a lot about?
Yeah.
I couldn't help, thank you, Paul, knowing about Caddyshack.
Just by osmosis. If nothing else.
Pretty much.
All right. And then finally, you said you know a lot about the International Criminal Court in The Hague.
The International Criminal Court simultaneously represents the most exalted aspirations of man, that we would bring justice to these horrible crimes, and the monstrosity of mankind at the same time, that we would even have to do it. But I have to be honest, I'm a big fan of the show. I listen a lot. And whereas I have real expertise in mascots and Caddyshack, I don't have expertise in the criminal court, not really, but I thought you wouldn't pick it. It's such a downer. We're talking about crimes against humanity. We're talking about just horrible things. So I pretty much just wanted to narrow the choices to the first two. So this was a bluff, a ruse.
Wow.
Let's see if you call me out on it.
A little bit of game theory.
Well, buckle up, Mike.
Yeah.
Buckle up.
Well, I hope Slobodan Milosevic doesn't hear that and accidentally hang up, knowing that it's not a genuine interest of yours. All right, well, to summarize, Mike, you told us you know and love college nicknames and mascots, the movie Caddyshack, and you dared us to pick the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Today, we're going to quiz you about the movie Caddyshack.
Oh, thank God.
Yes, I think our listeners also breathe a sigh of relief. How often do you think you've seen it, either because of your friend or on your own?
Probably 7 to 10 times in the hour and a half screening, but in 1 minute increments, hundreds of times.
Wow. And do you have any favorite moments?
Just being the ball is something that I've internalized over my life. Be the ball.
And as someone who's covered sports, have you covered golf? And did that inform how you report on golf?
I did 2 golf stories in my 10 years. It wasn't my game. And one of the stories was just Tiger Woods' teary apology that he, you know, did all these terrible things. And that counts as a golf story.
Oh, okay. So not much. Right. All right. Well, just ahead, we're going to enlist the help of a bona fide expert in your topic with our question worth up to 3 points. But before that, to let you show your love, here are 5 trivia questions about it, each worth 1 point. If you want it, you're allowed a hint for any 2 of these 5 questions. Now, Ellen, do listen closely, because if Mike answers incorrectly, you can steal. By the way, Ellen, how much do you know about the movie Caddyshack?
I thought you were talking about the Adam Sandler movie, and that's totally not.
Yes, Happy Gilmore, I think maybe you're thinking of. Yeah, no, I
know
that.
I was thinking
I know that you would hope that we would choose the International Criminal Court in The Hague, because that is your true passion, but unfortunately did not break that way. All right, Mike, here we go. Question number 1. Caddyshack was co-written by someone who had been a caddy and also appears in the movie. His brother had also worked as a caddy, and he too appears in the movie, and both brothers appeared as regulars on Saturday Night Live, but not at the same time. What is the last name of these brothers?
They're the Murrays.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. We are on our way. Fun fact, Brian Doyle Murray and Bill Murray are the two who are in the movie. Their brother John also worked as a caddy and also appears as a caddy in the movie. The film's director, Harold Ramis, had also been a caddy. By the way, as we record this, the Murray brothers are participating this weekend in the 22nd annual Murray Brothers Caddyshack Charity Golf Invitational, which is why they probably will not be our experts. All right. All right, here's question number 2. One of the most famous scenes in the film involves a candy bar floating in a swimming pool being mistaken for what is referred to as a duty. What brand of candy bar is it?
Think about this. If you're going to cast what's the perfect candy bar to play that role, be the Baby Ruth.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Helen agrees with your casting decision of a duty. Fun fact, the Baby Ruth candy bar does not float.
Oh.
Yeah. What kind of movie magic trickery was involved to make it seem like it did? We may never know or care. All right, here's question number 3. Taking place mostly at a golf course, you'd expect lots of golf clubs to be mentioned in Caddyshack. But which of the following golf clubs is not mentioned in the movie? Is it driver, 2-iron, 5-iron, wedge, or putter?
There are famous lines with driver and 5-iron. Well, I could get a hint. I'll just risk it. 2-iron.
Ellen?
That is not correct.
No, I'm terribly sorry. Ellen with a chance to steal.
Putter.
Ellen?
That is correct.
Ellen with a successful steal.
Yeah!
I think the key to the steals is to not see the movie that we're asking about.
The curse of knowledge.
Fun fact, while a putter is not mentioned, it is of course featured in many scenes, including one where Chevy Chase as Ty Webb sinks a number of amazing putts in a row. However, you never see him actually make a putt. The sequence shows him hitting a ball and then cuts to a shot of a ball going into a cup. Again, movie magic. All right, let's see if we can bounce back with this
one. Are you going to tell me the gophers weren't trained actual gophers? Is that where we're going with this?
I don't want to spoil what may be a question to come.
Okay.
All right, let's see if you can bounce back with this one. Mike, you still have your two hints available. Although mostly known for its original Kenny Loggins songs, including the theme I'm All Right.
Yeah.
I think it's I'm All Right, but nevertheless.
I'm All Right. Okay,
there you go.
We're rolling with it. We don't have the rights to it anyway, so we all have to cut it out. Yeah.
Although mostly known for its original Kenny Loggins songs, there are many more memorable melodies in the movie. When wealthy Al Chervik, played by Rodney Dangerfield, honks the horn of his Rolls Royce, what appropriate tune plays?
I thought you were going for the any way you want it. That's the way we need it. Ender, could you give me a hint for this one?
Helen, how about that first hint?
I think from Gold Diggers of 24, it's Where in the Money?
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct for the point. Very nice use of the hint. The official title is The Gold Digger Song, parenthesis, We're in the Money, and it comes from the movie The Gold Diggers of 1933.
Ah, I was off. They had a lot of Gold Diggers movies.
There were so many Gold Diggers.
True.
Who can keep track of them all?
That's
bonus
right.
Fun fact, Ginger Rogers introduces the song in the movie and sings it in Pig Latin. 1930s movies, everybody. Movie magic. All right, here's question number five, Mike. The meddling Mr. Gopher was not, in fact, a real gopher. I'm sorry to break it to you, but was, in fact, a puppet operated by Tim Lawrence. But the voice of the gopher came predominantly from a TV show about a very different kind of animal. What TV show was it?
That's a great question.
Thank you.
Of the gopher. I'm going to take the hint.
Helen, how about that second hint?
Okay. These are the lyrics. Ready?
Yeah.
Everyone loves the king of the sea. Ever so kind and gentle is he. Tricks he will do when children appear, and how they laugh when he's near. They call him
Flipper, lighter than air. That?
Ellen?
That is correct.
And he sung it as well. Very nice job.
Again, we don't have the rights. That'll all be cut out in post.
Fun fact, although the gopher sounds came from what was used as the voice of the dolphin, Flipper, they were not sounds from a real dolphin, because dolphin sounds from Flipper actually came from a kookaburra, an Australian bird that also supplies that sound that you hear in old jungle movies.
I think this is how the pandemic started. I'm not sure.
That's right. There was, there was contamination. There was that kookaburra to dolphin to gopher at the wet market.
The Chevy Chase leak and the whole thing. Yeah.
All right, Mike, you did quite well in that round, but now here's your expert level question that requires multiple answers. It is time for your cluster fact. We'll be bringing on an expert to discuss your response. Mike, while Caddyshack shows Danny Noonan's work as a caddy, he frequently talks about his other career ambitions and his difficulty in deciding what to do. For up to 3 points, when Danny hints to Ted Knight as Judge Smales that he could use help paying for law school, what career does Judge Smales suggest instead? Next, when Danny says he's taken the Cooter career performance test at school, what career does the test suggest he's suited for? And finally, who played Danny Noonan?
All right, the world needs ditch diggers. That was the performance. I'll skip to the third one. Mm-hmm. It was Michael O'Keefe as Danny Noonan.
Okay.
And what did the test predict? I believe this was in a dialogue scene with Chevy Chase. What did they want him to do? I'm going to say architect.
Architect. All right. Helen is taking note of those answers. We have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure. Helen, who do we have tonight?
Joining us tonight is an Oscar-nominated actor whose decades of work in film, TV, and Broadway include playing Danny Noonan in Caddyshack. It's Michael O'Keefe.
Yes!
I think we're blowing Mike Pesca's mind.
Oh,
Michael
my!
O'Keefe.
It's amazing.
Hello, Michael O'Keefe.
Thanks for having me. It's good. I was on the Zoom meeting, so it just happened to work out that I was here when...
Yes, we were discussing sales and metrics before this, and I'm glad we were able to keep you on for the show part. Of course, in addition to Caddyshack, people will remember you from your recurring roles on shows like Roseanne, Homeland, Masters of Sex, movies like The Slugger's Wife, Michael Clayton, and of course, The Great Santini, for which you were nominated for an Oscar. What a wonderful career that you've had and that you continue to have, as well as being on stage. What some people may not know is that you also have had success as a songwriter. You wrote most notably with Bonnie Raitt on the song Longing in Their Hearts, One Part Be My Lover. Both of those albums that those songs were on won Grammys. I'm very curious, first of all, how did the Grammys compare to the Oscars? Because we don't meet a lot of people who got to go to both.
The thing about the Grammys, the first one I went to with Bonnie, I don't think we were married yet, and we were just kind of living together. And I'd come home from one of those usual unemployed actor days where she was like, mm-hmm. What was your day like? And I was like, oh, you know, I went to the dry cleaner, which gave me a sense of accomplishment. Yeah. You know? She said, yeah, I got a dozen roses from Elton John, and my dad called. We're going to go have dinner. I got nominated for 4 Grammys. back up. What was that about the Grammys? And then we went and she won all 4 that night. So it was really one of those crazy, unpredictable things where she was catapulted into the stratosphere of music fame. And I happened to be her date, you know.
Let's not diminish the idea of going to the dry cleaners. That still is a big day for both of you.
For an unemployed actor, that's a real serious accomplishment. You can put that on your resume, actually.
Well, you're still making movies and still writing songs. Tell us about this new project that's coming up called One True Loves, where you get to do both.
Yeah, you know, Philippa Sue, who you may remember, played Eliza opposite Lin-Manuel Miranda in Hamilton on Broadway. It plays my daughter in the movie, and she is at the opening of the movie with Simu Liu, the young actor from Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings. And she gets a phone call, Philippa, and it's her dead husband, who's portrayed by Luke Bracey, this wonderful Australian actor, who had died, quote unquote. But there he is on the end of the phone saying, hey, I'm alive. And so she's got to make a choice between the two. While we were filming, Alex Reed, who is one of the writers of the screenplay, along with his wife, Taylor Jenkins Reed, who wrote the novel that the movie's based on, and I started having a conversation. And I said, you know, I think I can write a song for this movie if you let me, you know, try. And I, you know, played him 1 or 2 of the songs that I'd written. And then I called my songwriting partner, Suzzy Roach, who everybody may remember as being one of the 3 Roach sisters. And they were a fantastic singing group together. We wrote 3 of the songs, but they bought 1 of them, and it's in the movie. It's called Used to Be. And it's kind of a pivotal moment where these 2 characters that were in love and were together have to decide if they're going to stay together.
So where will people be able to see this film?
Well, it was in theaters, released in theaters on April 7th, and now I think you can rent it on Amazon and Apple, or you can just come over to my house and watch it here.
Oh, wow, what an exciting special offer for our listeners.
Yeah, we have it in a perpetual loop, so just anytime.
Excellent. Well, let's get into it and talk about Caddyshack. I saw an interview where you said that making Caddyshack was like an exercise in controlled chaos. Well, I'd heard you describe it also sort of as 6 weeks of parties, and it had a reputation as being sort of this drug-fueled set. You know, it was the late 70s, and it was a lot of comedy people. How much truth is there to that?
There's a whole lot of truth.
Okay.
It's about as true as you can get. And, you know, people thought partying was kind of the thing to do. So, you know, in retrospect, there was way too much of it because we lost Doug Kenny directly as a result of all that.
Right, that's the co-writer.
And one of the great comic geniuses of his generation, you know, and that's a heartbreaker. So there was the fun aspect of it, but there is the darker aspect to it, and Doug's death was certainly one of those things.
Now, of course, you were working with some wonderful comedic actors who were known for their improvisation, but you were allowed to improvise as well. You were able to keep up, especially, I believe, in those Chevy Chase scenes.
Well, yeah, I got to throw in 1 or 2 lines. Clearly, Bill Murray is the genius of the improv in that movie, along with Chevy and Rodney and Ted as well. And I just essentially grabbed onto their coattails and tried to keep up.
The script changed a lot from before you started filming to, I think you had said about a week in, things changed a lot.
Yeah, you know, I think Harold kind of came to the realization that in Ted and Rodney and Bill and Chevy, he had kind of created a modern day Marx Brothers team, you know, which of course then made my character Gummo Marx. the not terribly funny one and the one not in the leading role.
Yeah, but he was still there. He was still there.
Yeah, and good at business behind the scenes.
Well, it was good that Harold did what he did because that's why we have the movie we have. Mm. You know, that's why it's a classic and why people love it.
And, you know, here we are almost 45 years after it came out and people are still talking about it. It's so many people's favorite movie. Do you have a theory as to why that is?
There was something about the zeitgeist, and this was really a Doug Kenny thing. They captured the zeitgeist of that kind of snob versus the slob thing. And they did it in Animal House and they did it in Caddyshack. And, you know, if you go back and look at some of the movies just a little bit earlier than that, of some of the more successful Hollywood comedies, it was a completely different genre. It was a completely different vibe. It was a completely different feel. It was more like Vegas as opposed to rock and roll. And Animal House and Caddyshack really were rock and roll as opposed to, like, you know, Ocean's 11, for instance.
Right, but you mentioned the Marx Brothers. They are the slobs versus snobs. So they were getting back to chaotic comic roots with this movie and those movies.
I think you're right about that. You know, I mean, and if you go back now and look at any of those Marx Brothers movies, they still land. They're hilarious.
Last thing I want to ask you about, you've worked with so many amazing actors over your career. What stands out to me, though, is you got to work with Bette Davis. What do you remember about working with her?
You know, I did this one of these, like, Children of the Corn movies with Bette Davis, and I played the young corn god. I'm doing air quotes again. My character, would reign for 7 years as the corn god, and then it was a matriarchal society and an agrarian society, and it was a horror movie. And so the way the corn was ensured to grow every 7 years, they would slit the throat of the corn god and drain his blood into the ground.
Based on a true story, I understand.
Kind of like my Catholic upbringing. The first scene I did with Bette Davis, Ms. Davis, as we called her on the set, and Leo Penn was directing, Sean Penn's father. We were in a town square, and Ms. Davis was seated on a kind of throne, and I knelt before her for the rehearsal, and she essentially, like, knighted me, you know, "Arise, Sir Knight, you are the corn god." And when we rehearsed the scene, I didn't break a smile. I just stared daggers at her. My character's name, by the way, was Worthy Pettinger. And Ms. Davis's character's name was The Widow. And so I stared these daggers at Bette Davis. And then when Leo cut, without missing a beat, Bette Davis turns to Leo and goes, "Leo, I don't think Worthy likes The Widow." And I immediately fell in love with Bette Davis. I had always been a huge fan of her, but of course at that moment I was like, you could have just knocked me over with a feather. I was a 20-year-old kid who had this thing about wanting to be an actor, and there was this legend that I got to work with. So it was pretty amazing.
Amazing indeed. All right, well, let's get to the reason we brought you here. As far as our game is concerned, you heard the questions that we asked of Mike. First, we wanted to know, when Danny hints to Ted Knight as Judge Smales that he could use help paying for law school, what career does Judge Smales suggest instead? Helen, what did Mike Pesca say?
Mike said, "The world needs ditch diggers."
And Michael?
Yeah, absolutely. It was the ditch digger line. You got that right.
Excellent. Very good. A point for Mike. Next, we wanted to know, according to that Cooter career preference test at school, what career does the test suggest he's suited for? Helen, what did Mike say?
Mike said architect.
And Michael O'Keefe?
No, it's underachiever.
Right.
Underachiever. Yes. All right. And finally, we wanted to know, who could it possibly be who had played Danny Noonan in Caddyshack? Helen, what did Mike Pesca say?
Mike said Michael O'Keefe.
And sir?
And you're correct, Mike. So good job on that.
Excellent. Another point for Mike Pesca. Well, Mike, while we've got Michael here, anything else you'd like to ask or say to him?
Sure. Let's get right to it. From what we understand, Bill Murray and Chevy Chase, legendarily not fans of each other. In fact, one replaced the other on SNL. But they had that brilliant scene. From what I read, they knew they needed a scene together. Did you see any sign of tension or discord between them on set or any other time?
No, they were nothing but professional to the extent that those two are capable of being professional. But if you go back and look at a Howard Stern talk show where he had Chevy on, Chevy talks about the quote-unquote fight that he and Bill had backstage at SNL, and that's the real story. And it was probably a lot more like a high school shuffle, scuffle that essentially, it sounds like from Chevy, that Belushi kind of tried to, you know, engendered the fight between the two of them and then had to break it up at the same time.
Always Belushi, always getting in the middle of things.
Michael, it's been so wonderful you've been able to join us. If people want to find out more about you and what you're up to, where can they do that?
Well, they can go to their local police station where I'll probably be held on bail.
All right. Well, we appreciate that. And of course, look for your new movie, which of course is called One True Loves. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Michael O'Keefe, everybody.
Thank you, guys.
Awesome. All right, Helen, what is our score at the end of that round?
At the end of that round, Ellen Aquario has 7 points and Mike Pesca has 8 points.
Ooh, very close game. All right, now it is time for our final round we call Fast Facts. I'll read 10 statements and each contestant will answer with true or false. I'll start with Ellen and alternate between each guest. Each correct answer is worth 1 point. Again, the answer to each statement is true or false. Here we begin. Ellen, a very tall building can be called a skyscraper.
True.
Correct.
Mike, the movie The Towering Inferno took place in a skyscraper.
True.
Correct.
Ellen, that movie featured O.J. Simpson.
False.
Incorrect.
No, it really did. Mike, that movie featured Robert Redford.
False.
Correct.
Ellen, that movie featured Fred Astaire.
False.
Incorrect.
No, it really did.
And then true.
Mike, Fred Astaire was nominated for an Oscar for his role in The Towering Inferno.
True.
Correct.
Ellen, it was the only Oscar nomination he ever received.
True.
Correct.
Mike, it was the only Oscar nomination the movie received.
False.
Correct.
Ellen, the movie was nominated for Best Original Song.
True.
Correct.
Mike, the movie won for Best Original Song.
True.
Correct.
Ellen, that song was Disco Inferno.
False.
Correct.
Mike, that song was We Didn't Start the Fire.
False.
Correct.
Ellen, that song was Hey, That Skyscraper's on Fire.
False.
Correct.
And finally, Mike, that song was Hey, Is That O.J. Simpson and Fred Astaire?
False.
Correct.
All right, we're not going to count those last few. I want to thank Ellen and Mike as Helen tabulates the final score. The song that won the Oscar from The Towering Inferno was called We May Never Love Again. By the way, Disco Inferno was inspired by a scene in that movie, a scene at a burning disco. All right, Helen, are you ready to announce the winner of today's show?
I am. At the end of the game, Ellen Aquario has 10 points and Mike Pesca has 13 points.
Congratulations, Mike Pesca. You are the facting champion on Go Fact Yourself, a high-scoring game for both of our contestants. Mike, what will you do with your championship?
Start the fire!
You're going to start the fire, okay. You did start the fire. All right, we're going to wrap things up by giving everyone here a chance to mention or promote anything they might like. Ellen, what are you up to and where can people find your work?
You can find me on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, everything at Ellen Aquario. That's ELLENACUARIO. And I will have a headlining show May 25th at Laughs Comedy Club in Seattle.
Awesome. Well, so wonderful to meet you. And thank you so much for joining us, Ellen Aquario.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mike Pesca, what about you?
My show, The Gist, is on every day. I have a Substack called Pesca Profundities, and we still have the GoFundMe up for the Deniushkin family. Just Google Pesca and GoFundMe, and maybe you'll put it in the show notes. They still are accepting donations and need them. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, my hosting partner is Helen Hong. Helen, what do you have going on?
You can follow me on all the socials at Funny Helen Hong, because as we know, that other Helen Hong, she ain't funny.
Not funny, but this one is.
And you can watch my comedy special, Well Hung, on multiple platforms, including Amazon, Apple TV, and YouTube.
And go up to Helen at any comedy festival. That's how you end up being on our show. Helen Hong, everyone. And me, you can find me on Twitter at @J_Keith, on Instagram at jkeith.net, all spelled out. That just leaves me to thank Ellen Aquario, Mike Pesca, Karen McCullough, Kirsten Kiwi-Smith, Larissa Olenek, Michael O'Keefe, and thank you for listening and supporting our show at MaximumFun.org. I'm J. Keith Van Stratton. Good night. Like what you hear? Come see us live. It's happening again. Go to GoFactorPod.com for our schedule and tickets. Meanwhile, please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, all at GoFactorPod, update our wiki at GoFactorWiki.Fandom.com, and buy our T-shaped shirt and mug-shaped mug at MaxFunStore.com. And give us a great review on your favorite podcast platform, like Trish603 did on Apple Podcasts. He, she, or they said, fantastic show. The episodes have great replayability, and knowing / remembering the answers in the follow-ups makes me feel like a smarty pants. Thanks, Trish603. I hope you replay this review and feel even smarter your pants. Ellen?
Go Fact Yourself is a panel quiz program devised and produced by Jim Newman and J. Keith Van Stratton and comes to you via transcription from various homes across the world. Questions were compiled by the Trivia Industrial Complex. We are produced in collaboration with Maximum Fun. Maximum Fun senior producer is Laura Swisher. Associate producer and editor and overall hero is Julian Burrell. Our show engineer is Dave McKeever. Our theme song and incidental music were written and performed by Jonathan Green. Research assistance provided by Adam Nediff. Quiz assistance provided by Clint Tauscher and Bart Gold. Promotional graphics by Erich Tran. Added support from Dave Bianchi and Christine Vallada. Special thanks to Alex Bielman at Trademark Talent. Adrienne Sandoval at Forward Entertainment. Seth Jarrett at Jarrett Entertainment. Jenna Block at Verve Talent and Literary, Dee Perez and Erica Carter at Nickelodeon, Jason Kravitz, Betsy Zyko, Arden Marine, Shoshana Ryan, Jason Stewart, and Kirk Carley. I've been Helen Hong.
Let's go watch movies that people enjoy.
Like 10 Things I Hate About You.
And Caddyshack.
And also, what is TikTok?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.